You've spent decades building something remarkable, but at some point, every founder faces the same question. What happens next? We're Brian and Cameron Boutil, and this is Coordinate Your Wealth, where we have the conversations that wealthy families and experienced advisors have behind closed doors. Business exits, succession planning, and wealth preservation. Legacy. Whether your timeline is 5 years out or 5 months, this is where you come to see the full picture of what it means to exit well. Welcome to Coordinate Your Wealth. I'm Brian Boutil from the Boutil Wealth Management Group, a managing director at UBS Private Wealth. Today, we're going to be exploring one of the most powerful and often overlooked business succession strategies available to business owners today, the Employee Stock Ownership Plan, or ESOP as it's commonly referred to. If you built a successful company and are wondering how to transition ownership while preserving your culture, rewarding your employees, and protecting your legacy, this conversation may introduce you to an option you haven't fully considered. We have worked with business owners who spent decades building exceptional companies, only to find themselves facing one of the most difficult decisions of their careers, how to exit. Many assume a third-party sale was their only option, but they often have worried about what would happen to their employees, their company culture, their legacy that they've worked so hard to create. We've seen owners discover employee stock ownership through an ESOP and realize they may, there in fact, may be another path, one that balances liquidity, succession planning, and employee retention and long-term stewardship. What this really highlights is that a successful exit isn't about achieving the highest purchase price. It's about finding the right outcome for your family, your employees, and the legacy you've spent a lifetime building. And that's exactly what we're going to be diving into today. At Boutil Wealth Management, we work with business owners on a wide range of succession and exit planning strategies. Explore ESOPs as a potential path forward. We often partner with one of our in-house UBS specialist teams, notably Nick Francia, who is here today to help us explore ESOPs and whether or not they may be a right fit. Nick is a managing director with the Capital ESOP Group in Washington, D.C., with UBS, and has helped countless business owners navigate one of the most important decisions of their lives, how to transition ownership while preserving what matters most. Their experience provides unique insight into the opportunities, but also the challenges and the long-term impact ESOP transactions. And we're happy to have them as a valuable resource for our clients. So whether you're years away from an exit or you're actively exploring your options, the insights from this conversation may challenge the way you think about succession planning and business value. And let's get into it. Nick, you've worked with owners at every stage of the exit planning process. How would you define an employee stock ownership plan? And what role does it play in business succession planning?
Well, thank you, Ryan, and I appreciate you having me today. Just to level set, I think you did a wonderful job introducing that business owners have a number of different options. And just to get a little more perspective on that, when a business owner is looking at potentially monetizing their privately held business, every single owner has different goals and objectives. Not every owner looks the same. Not every company looks the same. Certainly not every employee base looks the same. So it's really important to understand what is it that we're trying to accomplish through a successful exit or through a successful transition, and then back into what strategies make the most sense for business owners. So I would say that the three most common strategies that we see and we talk about would be selling to private equity, selling to a strategic, and selling to an ESOP. And private equity, I think just about everybody understands, at least at a 30,000 foot level, what private equity is. Like, private equity is coming in, they want to purchase the company, they're typically going to make the company more efficient, run, operate, grow it for a 5 to 7 year timeframe, and then they're going to make an exit of that business to make money for their LPs or their investors. A strategic, very commonly, is a competitor, right? It's somebody that's coming in thinking 1 + 1 = 3. They could take advantage of the synergies. They could take advantage of the growth engine that's being provided by the two companies together. And so that's where you start to hear the terminology strategic premium. Right? A strategic buyer a lot of times is defined because they're willing to pay a strategic premium. And ESOP, also known as employee stock ownership plan, is also a way for a privately held business owner to sell their equity. That's as simple as I can make it. And ESOP is a buyer of stock. And ESOP is a tax-exempt trust that is created by the company for the sole purpose of purchasing the equity directly from a business owner. And the way that I would define that in a little more detail is I would say that an ESOP is a flexible, tax-efficient exit strategy. And the flexibility comes from the fact that we are creating the buyer. And because you're creating the buyer, you can dictate a lot of the terms. So for example, if you're looking at a way to diversify your net worth, take some chips off the table, monetize a portion of your business, but you're not necessarily ready to sell a controlling interest or sell 100% of it, you can sell anywhere from 30 to 49% in an ESOP transaction. That's called a minority sale. Or if you are at a stage where you want to monetize 100% of it and you want to sell all of your equity, you can sell 100%. So there's a lot of flexibility in the way that you structure deals and the way that you customize them to family dynamics, which we'll talk about a little bit later, or to the goals and objectives of the shareholder. The tax efficiency of an ESOP comes in two forms. The first is at the individual level. So as a selling shareholder of stock, if I was to sell my stock to a private equity or to a strategic buyer, I would be subject to long-term capital gains tax rates. Long-term capital gains tax rates in today's market is around 20% at the federal level, potentially a 3.8% Medicare surtax, and then state tax ranging anywhere from 0% in a state like Florida all the way up to 13.3% in a state like California. So let's just call it average being 30%. So if I sell a $10 million company, I'm going to pay $3 million to the IRS. I'm going to net $7 million. Well, what's unique about an ESOP is if the deal is structured properly, the selling shareholders can elect section 1042 of the Internal Revenue Code and defer or with the proper planning, permanently avoid paying the capital gains tax in connection with the sale. So from a valuation perspective, the ESOP should have an embedded 30% premium to selling to a strategic or to private equity because of the tax savings at the individual level.
Great point. Great point.
And then the last thing I'll say related to the company is the company itself, if it's taxed as an S corp, can operate federally and state income tax free to the extent that the ESOP owns the equity. So if you have a 100% ESOP owned company taxed as an S corp, the company is now operating federally and state income tax free, which allows for all of those free cash flows to be reinvested into the business, to service debt, to make acquisitions, to bonus out employees, to do whatever the board and the management team thinks is going to make the most sense for the business's solvency and longevity long term.
And Ed, we're in the midst of one of the biggest wealth transitions in the history of our nation, not just financial wealth, but the transition of businesses as well. And it, as you said earlier, I mean, we had two just recently. Normally, you get the phone call. You know, it comes from a competitor for a lot of cases. Hey, I want to buy your company. You know, and we also find people are not prepared. They haven't looked at all the options. And so when you're looking at an ESOP, as you mentioned, potentially significant tax benefits, what attributes make a company particularly well-suited for an ESOP transaction?
Sure. So I'll answer that question, but I'm also going to walk you through a little bit of the flow of funds as to how an ESOP actually gets financed, because I think that'll run full circle. So what makes a good fit? And you could ask 100 different service providers this same question, you're going to get 100 different answers. Right? There's no real black and white answer. But what we've seen, and we've been doing this now for over 25 years as a team, I've been doing it now for over 15 years, done over 500 transactions. What we've seen as the most successful transactions are companies that have $3 million or more of EBITDA, 20 or more employees, a strong management team, consistent, reliable cash flows, and not a lot of existing debt on the balance sheet. And when you think about that from a sector perspective, we've done transactions in just about every sector that you can name other than technology. Technology companies typically don't make great ESOP candidates because they trade at ridiculous multiples, regardless of what their profitability is, they trade at future earnings. Whereas a traditional manufacturing company, a construction company, architecture and engineering, the ESOP valuation is typically very competitive to a private equity valuation. So the most common sectors that we've seen is construction. No question, construction is number one. Anything construction adjacent, general contracting, HVAC, electrical, et cetera, and then manufacturing. So I would say those are really the two sectors that we see the most. But the way ESOP works, because I want to make sure that everyone understands from a financing perspective, how ESOPs are actually financed. Because with private equity, they have a checkbook, they have a balance sheet, right? With a strategic, they're just going to write you a check. With an ESOP, you're creating a buyer. You're creating a buyer that has nothing. So ESOP doesn't have a checkbook. ESOP doesn't have cash unless you give it cash. So how does this work? So let me just walk you through a very simple cash flow scenario of how an ESOP gets financed. So let's say that we're talking about a $10 million company. That $10 million company has the ability to take on debt, right? If they go to a commercial lender today and they ask that commercial lender to lend that company money based on that company's assets, cash flows, projections, et cetera, the commercial lender would be willing to lend the company money. So hypothetically, let's just say $4 million is the number. So the commercial lender would lend $4 million to the company. The company would just turn around and lend that $4 million to the ESOP trust. So in two simple steps, all we've done now is we have funded the buyer, which is the ESOP, with $4 million of capital. If I'm the seller and I'm selling $10 million of stock to the ESOP trust, ESOP is giving me $4 million of cash and giving me a $6 million promissory note, a $6 million IOU. So one day after the transaction closed, I've sold $10 million stock to an ESOP. I have $4 million sitting in a checking account. Assuming I've elected 1042, I can avoid capital gains tax on that $4 million. The company still owes me $6 million, right, which I'm going to get paid out over a period of time. But from the company's perspective, the company owes the commercial lender $4 and the company owes me $6. So going back to my comment earlier about tax efficiency, the reason that the tax efficiency at the corporation is so relevant is the company's going to use those tax advantages to service the debt in connection with the transaction. And then fast forward 6, 7, 8 years, depending on how quickly the company cash flows, the company's paid off all the debt to the commercial lender. The company's paid me the additional $6 million it's owed me. Company's now operating debt-free, tax-free. I now have $10 million that I received from my transaction. And the employees are now the beneficiaries of the company moving forward. So from a longevity perspective of the business and from a culture perspective of the business, the employees now have skin in the game.
That's huge. Because so many, and let's touch on this a little bit, that so many businesses are family enterprises. So in what ways does the family relationship in succession dynamics come into play in evaluating an ESOP? And if you would go a little bit further and talk about its benefits in terms of culture, which is a very big factor. We have a lot of business owners who, you know, want to make sure their employees are taken care of, or especially long-term employees. And you know, is there a way to tie it in even to long-term performance? I think some of these things are some of the single best components of an ESOP transaction. But Yeah, I'd be curious, you know, what you could add.
Certainly. So starting with the family dynamics, where we have found the most challenging conversations related to family members in a business, you have a matriarch and a patriarch who've probably started, if they're founder-led, they started the company 20, 30, 40 years ago. They've built a very successful business, and they deserve the opportunity to monetize their decades of work, to get some liquidity, to do all the things that they've wanted to do. But they're faced with a dilemma because their two kids or their three kids are in the business, and their expectations are that they're going to run this business one day because this is the family-owned business. They want to run it, right? And they want to monetize it. And so there's, I'm not going to say there's conflict, but there can be conflict, right? And it's certainly difficult conversations to figure out what makes the most sense when you have multiple generations and a business that you've got to think about. So what we see a lot of times is private equity is not a good option, right? In that scenario, I'm not saying private equity is worse than ESOPs or ESOPs are better than private equity. I'm just saying in this scenario, private equity is not a good option because if private equity comes in and buys the company, the kids have no legacy in it, right? Mom and dad taken care of, the kids have no legacy. So what we see a lot of times is the matriarch and patriarch, they will structure a partial ESOP. So let's just say the company's worth $100 million. They'll sell 40% of the business, of their equity, through the ESOP. They'll get $40 million of cash, money that they can touch, feel, and spend, do the things that they've wanted to do over the last couple of decades that they haven't because they've been in the business. So now they've monetized 40% for $40 million. Their family still owns 60% of the equity. So the company's operating 40% ESOP owned, 60% owned by the family. And now you can talk about transitioning that 60% equity ownership to the kids. Whether you do it through irrevocable trust, whether you do it through a direct transfer, whether the kids potentially buy it because you want your kids to feel what you felt in terms of having to potentially purchase the equity. But you can structure the other 60% however you want. But the net result is the matriarch and patriarch were able to get $40 million of liquidity to do the things that they want. And the kids now own the remaining 60%. So it's a really nice way of blending multiple generations' goals and objectives so that everybody's happy at the end of the day. The family sticks together most importantly, and the company continue to run and operate as a family-led company.
Correct. As well as, you know, there's a lot of business owners who've had loyal employees since the start. And it's a way of rewarding those employees as well. And also, statistically, I don't know if you could touch on the fact that how do employees react once they become an owner versus just an employee?
Sure. So I can give you my opinion, but just to, you know, point you in the right direction in terms of you want to see statistics and you actually want to see the research that's been done behind it, you can go to the National Center for Employee Ownership's website or the ESOP Association website. And then all the statistics and all the case studies on through recessionary periods, ESOPs have done better. ESOP-led companies have outperformed the general public markets, et cetera, et cetera. But culturally speaking, you have employees now that are economic beneficiaries of the business. So employees that care about not only what they're doing, but what their peers are doing, right? And how their peers are reacting because they're all rowing in the same boat. And if you start to get that mentality of employee ownership where employees have more accountability because it's ultimately going to be the economic benefit that they use to help their families retire at the end of the day, like they're more inclined to care, they're more inclined to be loyal, they're more inclined to push their peers to do better. So culturally, it's an unbelievable phenomenon when you look at how successful employee ownership makes companies in the long run, especially during downturn.
Absolutely. The data, as you mentioned, is there for sure. I mean, the market's been changing a lot. As we know, you touched on private equity. What trends, are you seeing any different trends that are shaping the future of ESOP?
Yeah, I would say there's a couple. You know, first and foremost, just M&A in general has obviously done exceptionally well over the last couple of years. I mean, you mentioned it earlier, but there's an unbelievable transition of wealth happening nationally, right? And so, you know, you're seeing more transactions as a whole, and you're seeing more ESOPs happen. So, you know, it's hard to delineate, you know, which factors are causing more ESOPs and more ESOP formations every single year. But there's no question there's more ESOPs that are being put in place every single year, year over year, over the last 15 years. And there's a couple that I think are driving it. It's the natural wealth transition, right? We know that. You also have a lot of larger companies that have done ESOPs, that are in the news, that have done successful ESOPs, such as BDO. Like, you have a major accounting firm that did an ESOP that added validity to the overall strategy. So now you have that are looking at it and saying, oh, if BDO did their own due diligence, thought this was the right thing for their company, it's probably something that I need to be looking at for my company. Like PACs, obviously, you know, you look back end of 2012, going into 2013, we had tax reform. Capital gains taxes went from 15% at the federal level all the way up to potentially 23.8% at the federal level. So there was an 8.8% increase to capital gains tax to the shareholders. So more business owners are going to be sensitive to not just what they're getting at the top line of their business, but what they're keeping after taxes. So that's certainly driving more ESOP activity. And then I would say all of that combined just creates more activity, right? More CPAs, more commercial lenders, more investment bankers are being forced to understand ESOPs because more of their clients are coming to them with questions about ESOPs and whether or not it's a viable alternative. So that's, I think, why you're seeing more, I would say, trends in the marketplace. And I've already touched on this a little bit, but the partial ESOP is something that we are seeing being implemented more and more than we ever have in the past. And I think part of it's because deal sizes are getting bigger. So the larger companies have the ability to really look at their options, whereas you might not have as many options as a $10 million company compared to a $200 million company. But we're seeing business owners that want diversification, want liquidity, want to get back to the rank and file of employees, but still maybe aren't ready to sell a controlling interest. So we have a significant amount of companies that we're working with right now that are looking at 40% ESOPs, 30% ESOPs, 49% ESOPs. And it's really a way to start that transition without having to monetize or sell 100% of the business today.
What are the key advantages that an ESOP offers versus a traditional third-party sale? And if you could, you know, so folks would say, you know, this is something I should at least explore in relationship to private equity, in particular, selling to a competitor, those different situations.
Yeah, so I could go on for an hour on that question. I'll think about how to break this down for you. So I think for starters, right? For starters, because Brian, just the same way you're objective, we're objective, right? We help business owners in any capacity sell in any different way. It's about figuring out what makes the most sense. So the first thing I would say is the number one question that I ask business owners when we're looking at different options and whether or not to quantify if an ESOP is a potential alternative is, do you believe in the cash flows over the next 5 to 6 years, right? If a business owner doesn't believe in the cash flow over the next 5 to 6 years, an ESOP's not going to be a good alternative. Because we're talking about taking on leverage. We're talking about a seller that's getting 40% cash at close, 60% in a back-end note. If the company's not successful, the ESOP's not going to be successful, right? So you really need to believe in the solvency and in the cash flows of the business over the next 5 to 6 years for the ESOP to be something that you're seriously considering. But if that's the case, if you believe in the business, right, a lot of times what happens when you compare and contrast this to private equity is private equity is going to provide a greater amount of cash at close, right, because they have a checkbook. They may provide 80% cash at close, but you're going to pay capital gains taxes on that amount. And then you're going to have very little business risk post-transaction, right? That's the highlight. That's the key elements of private equity. With an ESOP, you're not getting 80% cash at close if you sell 100% of the business. Maybe you're getting 40% cash at close. You're getting 60% over a period of time, but you're able to defer, potentially avoid the capital gains tax in connection with the sale. So all of that benefit right, comes with business risk. So from a liquidity perspective, I would say there's probably about a 3-year break even, meaning if you sell the private equity, you're probably going to be more liquid over the first 36 months. But starting in month 37 and beyond, you'll be more liquid if you sell to an ESOP, because you'll start to receive the sell or no principal payments and because of the tax benefits attributable to the ESOP. So again, it goes back to goals and objectives. But to answer your question more directly, the biggest benefits to an ESOP, flexibility. You're going to hear that word all the time. There is a significant amount of flexibility in structuring an ESOP because you're creating a buyer. And then tax efficiency. Tax efficiency at the corporate level, having a company operate federally and state income tax-free, you tell a CFO that, they're going to be thrilled in terms of trying to manage cash flows. And as a selling shareholder who's selling equity, under Section 1042, you have the ability to defer or potentially avoid the capital gains tax. So that's, I'd say, a summary, because I want to make sure that we are not suggesting that ESOPs are better than other alternatives. It's just that they are different, and it comes down to the individual and what they're trying to accomplish.
Right. And it's another tool or an avenue that should be explored that a lot of times business owners don't take the time to even look at their advantages or if it makes sense for them. And maybe it doesn't, but it certainly is something that we feel that a lot of businesses should take a look at as part of an exit strategy. But as we know, the vast majority of business owners have not even really planned for an exit. So, you know, that's also a dilemma, because if you haven't really looked, ultimately, look, at some point, all of us are going to retire. We're all going to have some type of exit. It makes common sense, just like you would plan your investments, your stocks and bonds, you'd have a plan there. Why wouldn't you have a plan for your business and how it's going to be transitioned and what are you going to do? And it's shocking how few business owners have looked at their mindset as, oh, I'll deal with it, you know, down the road, or I'll deal with it then, until, like I said earlier, the phone call comes. And now it's front and center. And now you got to think about it, but you haven't planned for it and you haven't looked at the alternatives. So, but look, I want to thank you. We've done some webinars and things in the past. You and Keith have been fabulous. You guys know your stuff. As I said, you said earlier, you've done over 500 ESOPs. I don't think there's many people who could say that. And that's why we're so grateful to have you guys as one of our resources that we can draw upon when we, you know, try to talk to our clients who own businesses to try and get them to start thinking about things. Because we feel is that we'd never want a client coming to us and say at the end, well, why didn't you tell me about it? Gee, I wish I knew about it. That, for me personally, I would find to be horrible. So we want to make sure that our clients are aware of all their options would be. So when it gets down to it, along with their other trusted professionals, they can make their most educated and their best decision. And that's really what it boils down to. And that's what we hope people do. And they come away with this, you know, with maybe to inquire and get a little bit more knowledge. And, you know, the fact that taking a look and utilizing experts such as you guys in ESOPs, in succession planning, creating meaningful outcomes for business owners. Nick, I want to thank you, your partner, Keith, who are just tremendously valuable assets for us. Like you said earlier, you guys have participated in over 500 ESOPs. I don't think there's many folks that could even remotely approach that. So we appreciate your expertise in ESOPs, but it's also part of the overall succession planning and creating full outcomes for business owners.
Thank
you, Rob. What we want to say at the end is build intentionally, steward wisely, and remember that a successful exit isn't just about what you leave behind, it's about what comes next. And we'll see you in our next episode. Thank you much.
Thanks, Brad.
Thanks for listening to Coordinate Your Wealth. If today's conversation gave you something to think about, a question to ask your advisor, a conversation to have with your family, or just a clearer sense of what's possible, that's exactly what we're here for. You can find resources and past episodes at our website. If this show is valuable to you, the best thing you can do is share it with another founder or business owner who's starting to think about what comes next. We'll see you next month.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.
Resonate.